All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Gabe Yannis and I, we are rolling solo. Now, I want to go ahead and start off by saying that if Gabe has to jump off the podcast, mid-podcast, he is in that, what do they call it, the birthing window, Gabe? You might need to jump off because you might have a new baby coming soon.
I thought you were going to say something about my Wi-Fi. Yeah, dude.
And your Wi-Fi.
So we're technically we're not in the window when we're recording this, but yeah, man, officially on Tuesday. So like 5 days after we record this, could be any day technically, but
I was giving Gabe crap because his internet has been perfect all these years. And then all of a sudden they're running lines for like fast internet and his internet starts getting a little bit crummy. So I don't know, man, something's fishy over there in Texas. But if this is your first time listening to the podcast, we really appreciate you guys checking it out. If you've been listening for a while, we really appreciate you guys. You know, we try our best to have great guests on. If you haven't gone back and check out the other episodes, please do so. And then Gabe and I, we jump on, we talk about life, we talk about training, we talk about family. And if you get in value, you know, simple ask, rate it, review it, share with a friend. That's it. You know, aside from us pushing our Train Hard app naturally, we don't have no paid ads, you know, so the way that you can support the podcast is just to share with a friend. But Gabe, let's rock and roll, man.
Let's do it, dude. You put up some pretty good topics for conversation that I'm excited to get into. I'm wondering, so you brought up Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life, which, you know, was super popular. I want to say like 2 years ago was when it like came out and like he got super popular. But how'd you get turned on to it now?
Dude, so someone sent me an email who listens to the podcast and he's like, hey, I think you'd be interested in Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules of Life. He said, I actually have it up right here in front of me. He says that number 4, which is compare yourself to who you were yesterday, was relatable to the podcast that you and I did with MDV a couple of weeks ago when this airs. So I'm like, all right, I've never heard of Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. I've listened to a lot of his other content, in particular, like some of his other stuff. So I went on there, I looked at his 12 Rules of Life, and I guess this is a book. So I want to download it as an Audible, but I have not yet. But for those who are unfamiliar with Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules of Life, I just want to go over them real quick because, like, I don't know if you know more about them, but some of them are kind of random, dude. Like, so the first one is stand up straight with you're pulling it up on the screen. Stand up straight with your shoulders back. Number one. Number two, treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping. Okay. Treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping.
So that's a really good one. And in the book, he has such an interest. So the example he has in the book, I remember this one clearly, is like a lot of people are much more likely, like if you take your dog to the vet and they're like, hey, here's what you need to do for the dog because it's like overweight or whatever. Like, needs to cut back on food, needs to take this medicine for 5 days, 2 days, 2 times a day. Most people, absolutely, 100% do it. Like, buy the book, step by step. But on the flip side, like, many people know the advice that they should be following to solve a specific issue. Could be health, could be weight loss, could be whatever, but we don't do it. We're always more likely to do the things for either someone or even a pet that we're responsible for helping, but we don't often treat ourselves in the same way. Sometimes, most of the time, maybe because like doing those things actually takes more discipline and can be a little scarier than just doing it for someone else. So I remember number two, and number two is a really good one.
Yeah, no, I like that one. I paused for a second. Like, treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping. It's like, okay. Like, and then analogy with the dog is perfect. You know, if they say, hey, you got to, I don't know, have them eat less salt. You're like, okay, I'll do that. The first one, stand up straight with your shoulders back. I'm at a standing desk right now, so I feel like I'm already winning this. But I imagine it has something to do with just posture, the way you present yourself. Bumping on to number three, befriend people who want the best for you. I think that's pretty straightforward, right? Identify people in your circle who want you to win. And I think everybody should want their friends, their family to win. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday. And that was the one that the gentleman brought up to me. Was there any stories from the book, if you had read it, about that one in particular? Because that's pretty good stuff.
It's been a while, so I don't remember that one specifically. But number three, hearing you read it right now, befriend people who want the best for you. So that one reminds me of like just something I've been seeing a lot. And Alex Harmozy talks about it. That's kind of the example that comes up most. And it's interesting how, and I'm sure everyone can relate to this, there's a lot of people in your life that like will root for you until you kind of like get to their level.
Oh yeah.
And that's it. Right. And I think what this says to me is like, I think the best people you can have around are people that are going to root for you regardless. Like, even if you get to a point where either perceived success or like real success, like maybe you eclipse them or you're past them, they're still rooting for you. They're not rooting for you conditionally. They're not rooting for you because they expect something in return. Like, befriend people that want the best for you, period. Doesn't matter what that means or what that means for them. And I think that those types of people and those types of friends are very, very rare. So if you find them, you should do everything in your power to keep those relationships close, because there's a lot of people that are going to, like, you know, say the right things and do the right thing. But I think it's to an extent versus the people that are really going to want the best for you, regardless of what that means.
For sure. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday. What I gather from that is, like, when you compare yourself to other people, that's difficult, right? The grass always greener. You don't know their situation, but if you can compare yourself to who you were yesterday, that makes sense to me. You know, who am I as a father? How am I leading? How am I doing as a husband? These are things I could look back on yesterday and say, hey, am I making a 0.01 improvement in these different areas? And if I do, I mean, shoot, that's going to compound over time and I'm going to be better and better and better and better. So I really liked that one. Number four. Number five, do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. I mean, these rules, some of them, as you get down to the bottom, are kind of random. I don't know. Again, I want to download this book. It was just something that came across my desk that I'm like, wow, I want to dive into. Like, what does he mean by that? Like, do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. So, for example, would I not let my children drink alcohol because I'm going to dislike? Like, I don't know exactly where he's going with that, but I could see the value in it. What he's saying.
One of the things he's really big on overall that I remember, especially from like a parenting perspective, is that like our job as parents is to make our kids like as likable as possible so that they're invited to as many games as possible. Like, he's really big on the fact that, like, I think that by the time your kid is like age five or something, he should be someone that kids want to play with and that like parents want to have him around. So it's not so much about like making your kids the fact that they're going to win every game they ever participate in. The game that you want to win is for them to be invited to play every game. Because if they're invited to play every game, that's how they're going to develop. And over time, even though they might not win every game, they're going to develop into like a much more well-rounded, person. So it's just making them be the person that everyone wants to play with versus the person that is particularly better at any one game. He has a whole video on that. So that's what this reminds me of. But I read this book a while back, so I don't remember all the details, but this is kind of reminding me of some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I'm glad we're talking about this. I've never heard of these. So number six, set your house in order before you criticize the world. I mean, dude, this one's pretty self-explanatory. And I used to think about this a lot in business. You know, we'd have a gym and you want to expand to a second location. And I remember I'd always have business mentors of mine be like, dude, if your house isn't clean, you don't want a second one. And it's like, made total sense at the time, because you're running a business and let's just say you're doing well, but you're not optimizing. You still have crap that you're doing wrong. And you're always saying, oh, I want to open another one. I want to do this. I want to do that. It's like, man, until your house is in order, you know, you can't go out there and go expand your business, was the theory then. And that's kind of the same thing here, right? Until your house is in order, don't criticize the world until you reflect on yourself is kind of, I think, has a lot to do with compare yourself to who you were yesterday. Like, if you're continuously trying to improve, that's where you should focus on, and not just trying to focus on like criticizing other people. You're just wasting energy and time instead of stuff that's actually going to impact your life, which is on yourself.
I love this one, man. I mean, I think I'm like skimming through the rest of them, but I think that this might be at least the most powerful one for me, or what I've taken to heart the most. You know, I think that there's so many things, especially today, that you can spend time and energy worrying about, right? Like, whether that's, you know, politics or whatever. Politics is kind of the thing that stands out to me. It's an election year. It's going to be a weird year, but there's so many things that you can complain about and like, quote unquote, like try and participate in fixing the problem by, you know, whatever that means. But I think that at the end of the day, like, first looking in the mirror and figuring out like, what can I do myself as an individual? Then figuring out like, what can I do better as a parent that impacts like my immediate family, and like literally just getting that 100% in order, that's the world that you have control over, not, you know, the things that are impacting kind of the world at large. And is that stuff important? Yeah, of course it is. But I think that for many people, it's a distraction or an excuse to not do the work to really improve the things that are in your control. Because it's easy to say like, hey, like I'm for this thing, because you can't really impact that thing versus
and social media hasn't done us any favors there.
No. Because you can join in on this like group that's just kicking and screaming about anything, right? Like not picking specific sides, but you feel very strongly about this or you feel very strongly about that. But at the end of the day, man, like we can all do so much work to just be better, you know, men, women, wives, husbands, dad, mom, whatever. And I think if we were to spend as much energy on that as we do on, you know, some of these things that are outside of our control, goes back to something you talk about all the time, man. And like one of the biggest things that helped you with, you know, your anxiety and competing and stuff. And when you started working with Adam, like there are things in your control, there are things out of your control. Like we spend so much time, and I still do this, I can still get better at this, worrying about the things that are outside of our control, that all it is detracting from the time and energy you can spend on the things that are in your control, which are going to infinitely help you because you can control them.
Well, and I think it's just a clickbait, right? So like, imagine if you go online, you go on Instagram right now, how many things are you going to see? They're going to criticize the world. A shit ton, dude, so many, right? You're going to see people are going to say, oh, look at this, look at this. And it's engaging. Like you want, like, and then all of a sudden you're focusing on all these other things, like name the post, right? Instead of like focusing on your house. So that's what I'm taking away from this. I think number 6 was a really good one. I think avoiding criticizing the world before your house is in order is key. And I don't know if my house is ever going to be completely in order, man. It's always going to be constant improvement. Number 7, pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. And I think that one's kind of self-explanatory. Obviously, don't look for things that are going to happen overnight, but look for things that are going to make an impact, that are something that's going to fulfill your passion, fulfill meaning, give you purpose. I think that's really a powerful one. And it's a good reminder. You know, we just finished a podcast yesterday, which is going to go out pretty soon, with Pete Roberts, the founder of Origin. This reminds me of him a little bit, right? Where he's pursuing what is meaningful to him, which is bringing back American-made product, denim, geese, rash guards here in the United States. And that has not been an expedient process for him. I mean, he looks at his business and life in terms of decades. And I think that that's something we could all kind of lean into. If you haven't checked out the Pete Roberts episode, make sure to do that, because he talks about the origin story, talks about American made, and talks about what it means to look for meaning, not just expedient.
Yeah, man. And this is especially difficult in a time where like convenience is everything, and we have so many convenient options, and we're almost like trained to chase convenience every step of the way. But you know, most times the convenient thing isn't the meaningful thing. And I think that that's where a lot of people maybe feel a little lost. It's because they haven't found the thing that's meaningful, because we're so like pushed towards finding the thing that's convenient. So yeah, I like this one too.
Number 8, tell the truth, or at least don't lie. Okay. Like, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. You know, I don't know. In my life, like, I'd rather just tell the truth. And dude, eventually the shit's going to come off. It's going to come back around anyways. I'm a big believer in like karma. I believe in, you know, treat other, like, so tell the truth, or at least don't lie. Makes sense.
But if I remember correctly, like, I mean, yes to everything you're saying, because I think what you're talking about is like malicious lies. Like everyone would agree that you don't want to like lie to someone maliciously. But if I remember correctly, what he talks about here is like avoiding the tough truths, specifically with people that like really need to hear, or the tough conversations you have for the sake of avoiding the tough conversation, right? Like there are many instances where either with Ariel, my wife, my parents, my family, where like I might have said something that wasn't the truth, because it kind of just kicks the can down the road of how I feel about something, something that's bothering me, something that I would like to do more. That's the tough part. Like, obviously don't tell lies like a bad person and like, you know, trick people. But what he really dives into here is like, tell the truth, even if that's going to make for a painful, uncomfortable conversation, because you know, to your point too, it does always bite you down the road. But that's if I remember correctly, what he talks about here, because that's the thing that's really tough to do. It's easier not to lie maliciously. It's a lot harder to tell the truth when that's going to lead to a much tougher conversation than if you can just, you know, brush it off or tell the white lie and just kick that can down the road.
Yeah. Or at least don't lie was another part of it. So if your wife asks you, hey, how do I look in this dress? You should just not respond then to her. Like, is it, like if you, I, or whatever. I always think Ashley looks great and everything, so it doesn't matter. But anyways, number nine, assume whoever you're listening to knows something you don't. I love that. It's one of the reasons why we have the podcast. I think that a lot of people, I think everybody has some type of world experience that I don't have that we could learn from. And I think assuming whoever you're listening to knows something you don't, I think that's powerful. Worst case scenario, you listen, you don't agree, you listen, you take something, you listen and in one ear, one thing, whatever. But at least you should assume that they are going to deliver some type of value to you, that they're going to have something there. I think that should be the assumption. And then you can figure it out as you go along the conversation.
It goes back to something we talked about the last time. It was just me and you on the pod, you know, strong beliefs loosely held. Like there are things that I believe very strongly, but if I'm listening to someone that disagrees with me completely, I shouldn't listen to them in a way of like, well, they're wrong, I'm right, and try and just dismiss anything that goes against my way of thinking. I should assume that they know something I don't and be open-minded to the fact that like that could potentially change my mind. You know, we've talked about this a lot, but I think that having the ability to change your mind, especially about things you believe strongly about, is such a superpower, and not being like super rigid in those beliefs, even if it's something that you strongly believe.
Yeah. Moving on to number 10, 11, and 12. These are interesting because I think you could take them at face value. You could look deeper into them. In particular, 11 and 12. Number 10 is be precise in your speech. I mean, I think you could take that in so many different ways, but just being articulate, explaining what you mean, being clear and concise and meaning what you say and saying what you mean, I think is what I'm gathering from that. And especially coming from his background, being as a therapist, and I could see why he says be precise in your speech. I'd have to think more about how that relates to my life.
11 and 12 are pretty funny. And it's funny now I'm trying really hard to remember like the meaning behind these. And I either didn't get to the end of the book or I have to reread it. I do remember the book's pretty dense. So it's kind of one of those where like, you know, you start reading it and you're like, oh, this is all really good stuff, really good stuff. But like you get to the point where you just like, at least I need a break from like this kind of stuff. But the last two are do not bother children while they are skateboarding and pet a cat when you encounter one in the street, which I'm sure have meaning outside of just what they're saying in face value, but I can't remember them. But dude, I'm excited for you to listen to the book and then we can revisit this on a later pod.
Yeah, no, we just what I gathered from that is like, don't stop kids that are skateboarding. I think what he's trying to say is like, dude, these kids are just out there skateboarding. Even if they're grinding up on a curb, like, dude, don't bother them. They're not out there causing like mischief. They're not trying to like rob people. They're just whatever. And like, if you see a cat, pet it. I don't know about that one. Like Ashley and Ava have a cat. I don't know how that one relates, but I will look at this on Audible and we'll get back to it. But it was just something that came across through email. Again, if you're on our newsletters, you can always respond to those. I get back to you. And that was what one of the ones that came through.
Yeah. And I think that that's also a good reminder, man. Like we read the emails that come back. I know you read all of the ones that go out in the newsletter, but I get emails all the time too, man, especially now that we're letting people know when new podcasts drop and stuff. So if you have anything, whether it's like something we should talk about on the podcast, a question, obviously we do the Q&As every month. It's a good reminder that you're obviously reading these emails, you're bringing stuff to these conversations. So hopefully people keep replying to those. But dude, I want to hear about Caden and video games.
Bro. Dude, so have you heard of the video game now I'm
at Fortnite. Wasn't it Fortnite?
Fortnite. Yeah. Fortnite. Yeah, there you go.
Of course I've heard about Fortnite.
Okay. So I'm not like deep in the video game mix, right? So I had heard of it, but I never really played it and I didn't really know much about it. So we get Caden a PS5 for his birthday. His birthday was actually yesterday, and we got it for him a little earlier. And, oh, dude, we were so apprehensive. So we've talked about this on the show. So we get it for him, and we get him different games, like Madden, golf game, baseball game. And, like, it was all good.
Up until this year, you guys had a strict, like, no video game policy. It wasn't something you were going to buy. You weren't going to bring it into the house, period.
That's right. 100%. So we had a strict no video game policy. So shame on me, man. So we get him a PS5. And everything's going pretty good. Like, he's not, like, super addicted to it. He'll play it a little here and there. Like, because the sport games aren't that addicting. Like, he would play with his uncle. He'd play with me. Like, it was a good way to, he can connect with friends. And it was just like, he played for, like, a little bit and was, like, done. It wasn't that big of a deal. It never caused us enough, like, grief where I was like, oh, this was a mistake. So it goes by about a month, 2 months, or whatever it's been, about a month. And he goes, Dad, I really want Fortnite. And he's like, I'll do anything to get Fortnite. I'm like, all right. I was like, you have to roll jujitsu at least once a week. You have to take up and down the trash cans because we have a long driveway. And you have to stretch instead of laying on the couch at night. You have to be on the floor, working mobility. Those were the three things in addition to whatever else that he would need. And he had to do it for multiple weeks in a row to then prove that he would get the Fortnite. So I'm like, all right. And yes, I kind of caved. So after a couple of weeks, he did it. We got him Fortnite. And dude, I'm telling you, in a week's time, I regretted the decision. In a day's time, I regretted the decision. In a week, I realized it was all my fault. And so it was about 2 weeks and he had played pretty a lot. It was like spring break. And he always sleeps in till like nine if he can. Like, he sleeps in as long as he can, when not on school days. But on now, he got up at six. I got up at 6:30. I go downstairs. This is like on a Saturday morning and I see him down there playing. I'm like, what is going on here? And it was a big lesson for me that at first, like, I was like frustrated. So then later on that day, we go and do jujitsu and he was being kind of like ridiculous. Like, it was just really bad mood. He was tired, really tired. And it's because he had woken up early, didn't get the sleep he needed, and he was acting out. And so I told him, I was like, look, man, we got to make changes. And it was my fault. I told him, because these games are designed to manipulate, to capture people and to not let them leave. And it's the only thing I've ever seen that would excite him enough that he would wake up early just to go do it. I had never seen that before on anything else he's ever done from anything. And it was just a really good lesson for me that, like, it wasn't so much the PS5 or the games. It was this type of game and how it gives you, like, the dopamine fix that then got him to do that thing. And so anyways, long story short, we cut it off. No more. That's it.
Has this made you rethink, like, even the decision of, like, getting the console in the first place? It's like step, like, the problem is that, you know, going back to what Savan was talking about, which, you know, if you guys haven't checked out that episode, that was a good one too. Of just having these, like, you know, very rigid rules that they can do anything they want within them. But, you know, once they get ice cream once at the ice cream machine by the pool, then that's when they're going to want to ask you for ice cream every time. Whereas, like, if they know that that's not an option, that's not an option.
Yeah, no, I think as far as I'm concerned, in this particular case, I don't think the mistake was a PS5. I think it was not creating boundaries when it came to this new game. First off, I don't think the game really has a place in our house anymore. So I'm gonna have to figure out, right now we're just like on a pause. Like, look, that was unacceptable the way you acted. You were tired. It's my fault. But we need to put a pause on this. That's where we're currently at. But I think what'll end up happening is that maybe we'll create, like, really strict boundaries around it, or maybe just get rid of it entirely. But I don't think the PS5 with the games is necessarily a mistake, because those don't seem to have the same addictive characteristics. Like, he won't go and play Madden for hours, but these games, dude, especially because he has, like, four friends that are on it, like, you could talk to him, and it's something about it, man. It's just crazy to me. I could see why people get so pulled in, because he's normally not that kid. They just got pulled in. So I'm glad we caught it early. But it was a really good learning lesson for me, because I did get frustrated at him at first. And then I realized, like, it was my own fault. It was my fault that I gave him that I knew was so addicting, and I still gave it to him. So I got to pull back.
Yeah, man, it's tough, dude. It's tough. I'm obviously a few years removed from kind of having those conversations and dealing with that kind of stuff. But it's tough, man, because the social pressure of the friends having it and feeling left out from it and so on and so forth. Like, that's really what makes it tough. Like, if he was just, you know, hanging out with dad, or if his friends didn't have it and you guys,
it wouldn't be a big deal.
It wouldn't be a big deal at all. But how do you deal with the, hey, what are you guys doing later after, you know, baseball practice? Everyone's going to go home and play Fortnite. And Caden's like, shit, you know?
Yeah. And I think the lesson I learned.
Is there any place there to have to even, like, I don't know how you would broach the subject with the other parents, but is there any place for, like, as that group of friends having a conversation about it? Or is that, like, completely inappropriate? I'm literally asking.
I mean, parents are going to have different perspectives on it. I think for me, we gave an inch and he tried to take a mile, and it was a big learning lesson. Like, I think that in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have given anything. But we should have created a lot more structure around it, I think, was the ultimate problem. And, but now we're going to backtrack, right? It's like the 12 rules of whatever. It's like, we just want to do better than we did yesterday. So, hey, yesterday we made a mistake. We're going to correct it. And that mistake was on me, because I got convinced because of, you know, he reeled me in, dude. He negotiated super well. He's like, look, I'll be doing grappling with you once, twice a week. I'll be doing this. I'll be doing that. He pulled me in. So I got to set the expectations better next time.
Yeah, man. I don't envy the position. And I think that, like, the biggest thing that I admire is A, like, the ownership of, like, dude, this isn't like a him issue. This was like a, you know, you kind of, like, let that happen. I think that that's a big step, because it allows you to really get to the crux of the issue versus, like, you know, blaming a kid that's literally just, like, we were talking about this the other day when we were talking about it. Like, you take a kid that age, you know, brain not completely developed, and you put him in front of a supercomputer and a game that's literally designed by the smartest people on the planet to grab your attention and not let go. How can you possibly blame him for wanting to play that bad or getting, you know, upset at you because you took it away? Like, he's fighting a 100% losing battle as soon 100%. As he turns that thing on and starts playing. So, you know, it goes back to another thing we talked about in a past podcast. You know, obviously I have a 15-month toddler right now, but also just, like, being able to put yourself in their shoes always and realizing that what they're doing isn't their fault, man. Like, he's acting out because he can't talk, he gets frustrated, can't ask for what he wants. You know, like, he's not crying because he, like, wants to make my afternoon, you know, more difficult. He's crying because, like, that's all he knows, and we're not giving him what he wants. And I think that just constantly as a parent, being able to take a step back and really look at, like, what role did I play in this situation? Or also, like, you know, is the kid actually doing anything wrong? Or is it just, you know, the fact that he doesn't have the tools to cope with whatever the situation is? I think having that empathy as a parent helps not, you know, potentially, you know, lose your cool, not potentially, like, you know, yell at the kid when it's really not called for, so on and so forth. You know, there's one thing having discipline and, you know, holding rules, but then there's another thing that's, like, just completely losing your cool because you think that they're just, like, being malicious, which they really aren't.
No, and that's exactly the reaction that I had earlier was what you're saying. And then I had to kind of put myself in check and be like, dude, this is 100. I go back inside the house and I tell Ash, I was like, this is 100% on me. I was like, I did this to us and I'm sorry.
But that's,
like,
such that's an what easy reaction to have in the moment, right? Dude, such totally. An easy reaction to have in the moment.
Dude, totally. And so, you know, again, the learning lesson from a parenting perspective is, you know, for me, if you give an inch, they're going to try and take a mile, and try and identify other things to fill up the time. You know, I think that the easy button for us was finding these things and convincing ourselves because other friends are on. And yeah, that's true. It is true. But I think that we've now, or at least I have, convinced myself to, like, we need to continue to, you know, encourage more sports, more outdoors. And we already do a lot of that, right? We do so much stuff outside, but man, this one just slipped through the cracks and it's 100% my fault. So I thought I'd bring that up here on the show, because if you're interested in getting that kind of stuff, I think there's a big difference between the sports games and these, like, you know, shooter games. Aside from, like, the violent side, it's like, it's whatever. Sure, that's a factor. It's more so like the endorphin dopamine dumps because you're like winning and competing. That's what I gather.
All right, taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the Train Hard app. If you're listening to this episode, it means you care about training, protecting, and providing, which means that you care about your health, your fitness, and becoming the most capable human being you can, just like me and Jason. Me and Jason use the Train Hard app for our training because there are three programs and it has something regardless of the season in your life you're in. If you have the time and energy and you're trying to be the fittest, strongest human being you can, we have four: strength and conditioning 5 days a week. If life is super busy right now and you need something that's just keeping your momentum from getting to zero, 20, 30 minutes max in the gym, in and out, it has a dumbbell version. If you don't have access to a bunch of equipment, we have the EMOM program. And if you're just trying to be the most jacked dad in the room, work on your body composition, we have the Flex program, which is exactly how I train and the program that I write. So if you haven't already, check the link in the podcast show notes, download the Train Hard app, train hard, but let's get back to the show.
While Gabe is trying to figure out if his mic is working, I did want to bring up a story. So I was in Tahoe and we were skiing, or actually Caden was skiing. I was snowboarding. And it's snowing outside, and we're leaving. And it's just a good reminder. I just always want to put this out on the podcast. Like, just when you think you're tough, just when you think you're out there doing something that other people aren't doing, and I'm in the garage, I'm training, I'm out here doing whatever. Dude, there's a group of four guys running in the snow down Tahoe. And it just was a good reminder for me that, like, just when anybody listening to this show thinks that they're training hard, there's always someone training harder, doing something that's completely unnecessary to most people's terms. Like, when I watch these guys running on the snow, I was like, bro, that just is unnecessary. Like, aren't you afraid of slipping? But to them, it's not unnecessary, man. It's a part of their life. So I just wanted to bring that out. Shout out to the four dudes running in Truckee, California.
So two things that kind of makes me want to talk about that I wanted to talk about anyway. So I appreciate you bringing it up. One, let me say the other thing first, because this is a quicker thing. The other thing I think turned into a whole conversation. I was listening to this on the podcast and just like, it was a great example of exactly what you were saying. Like, there are levels to hard work. Like there are levels to everything, right? Like you say, there are levels to Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Like, you're really good. You're a brown belt. You know, you're super strong, but like, you'll go and roll with some of these other guys. And it's like, it's just another level. Like, you haven't reached that level and they can just absolutely manhandle you. But the story was about, so the USA Olympic basketball team, there was a year, I can't remember the year, but there was a year where they lost to Spain. So for a couple Olympics in a row, the USA basketball team was just kind of like, it got complacent because it was so dominant for so long, right? Like, the Olympics almost turned into like a vacation for these guys.
Yeah, dude, like, wasn't this like a movie or something? I saw this in a movie, didn't I? No,
I don't know. Did you? I don't think it was.
I thought this was like on, I thought this was on a documentary, like a Michael Jordan documentary. I'm tripping.
Maybe it was in the Michael Jordan documentary, but it's its own documentary. It's the USA Redeem Team. But the specific story was, so the USA team goes back 4 years after losing to Spain because, you know, Europe had a chip on their shoulder and they were like, dude, we have a chance to beat them, and they beat them. So 4 years later, teams come back stacked with NBA talent. Like, you know, there's all, anyone that you can name that's like the star was on that team. And they thought that they were coming in and they meant business, right? Like, they're coming in, they're training hard, they're going to win. And they still go out at night. And they come back from going out. It's 3 a.m. and Kobe is waking up to go get shots in at 3 a.m. to go practice. And even at that level, even at the level of like the best basketball players in the world, like, Kobe was on another level of the work and input it takes to be great than everyone else that arguably is also great. Like, these are all like the best of the best of the best, but even they were at the point where like, yeah, we work hard all day. You know, you kind of start the day at like 7 a.m. You have like two different practices. You're working out till like 8, then you go get dinner. But then, you know, you go out, you know, you're enjoying your time. You're in a different country. It's the Olympics. Like, you know, you're going out to the club, all these things. Like, that didn't exist for Kobe. And I think it's one of the things that made him so great, because even when he got to the point where he was cemented as possibly one of the best of all time, he was still putting the work in, because it's what mattered to him. I thought that was just such a cool story. And, you know, it's so unfortunate that we lost Kobe as young as we did, but there's just different levels to it, man. Yeah. And like everyone out there that is the best did not get there by accident. Like, is there some genetic talent? Sure. But like, you always hear these stories of they were doing the stuff that literally no one else, even at that level, was willing to do. And I fucking love that shit.
I can't remember who the player was that was telling that story. Now I know exactly the documentary you're talking about.
Oh, I haven't watched it. I just heard the story, but man.
Oh, it wasn't The Last Dance. Like it's part of the it wasn't The Last Dance because it wasn't about the Bulls or it wasn't about Michael Jordan. It was about this dream team and about losing and whatever. And basically, yeah, I can't remember the player's name that brought it up. But long story short, he's coming back into the hotel and yeah, Kobe's right there. And I think LeBron, I think they actually interviewed LeBron about that one too. So yeah, dude, man, there's levels to the game for sure.
And tying it to something that you recently were talking about, that's also the perfect example of this idea of like, you want to pull people, not push them. Like Kobe didn't like get the team together and like yell at them that they should work harder and whatever. He just showed up led by example. And the whole story in the documentary is that people saw that. They saw like the type of work Kobe was putting in and everyone kind of got their act together and started, you know, putting the work in. And it wasn't because he pushed them to do that. It's because he pulled them by, you know, setting the example.
Well, that brings up another email I got. I mean, this guy, we were talking about getting your family and friends interested in fitness. And one of the examples that this gentleman sent me, he's like, hey, my pastor at the church used the example of pulling a string across a table versus pushing it. So if you pull it, it stays nice and tight. It goes in a straight line. Like you could guide people straight was the analogy. Whereas if you try and push the string, it goes in all different directions and it resists that change. Right. And so that was the analogy that I brought back to you was from this, from an email. He brought it up and I really love that idea. You know, if you're pulling people versus trying to push them and what impact that would have on a shoestring is the same correlation. And Kobe did a good example of that.
Dude. Kobe, the GOAT. The other thing that the guys running reminded me of is, so, and I think you would agree with this. And I think that anyone that like knows me would generally agree with this, but I think I consider myself to be like a pretty like low anxiety person. Like, I don't think I get like very anxious about stuff, very stressed. I think I'm like pretty easygoing. That being said, one thing that I've noticed lately is that I think I'm actually like very, very anxious about this baby that's coming and having two kids under two.
Yeah, and, I would be too.
Yeah. And it's funny because the reason, and Ariel kind of brought this to my attention, the reason that I think that I'm like a lot more nervous and anxious about it than I maybe come off as is because I've been doing, dude, so much more, like so much. Like, so I picked up running. So I've been waking up like 3 to 4 times a week. And it's actually really cool because the first time I did it, I wake up at like 4:30. I'm out the door before 5 because I want to go out, be back in, showered before 6 because I want there to be zero chance that Shay wakes up and I'm not like there, ready, present. Like I don't want to be outside and have Ariel have to deal with it. So I have to get out there early. And so I've been running in the mornings and I just like, it felt like I needed to get like more energy out. Like I just felt like I'm still working out. I'm still doing flex at my usual time, but just like for the past few weeks, like I haven't felt right. And the thing that has helped has been adding this running in the mornings. And it's been really cool because I do the entire run in pitch black darkness and I live out here in the country. So there's no cars. I'm on the road completely alone.
You're a headlamp?
So I have a headlamp that just lights like in front of me, but like as a flood,
it's actually really cool. You sound like Nick Bear, bro.
And it's so quiet, you can see all the stars. Like the first two nights, especially that I went out, like the sky was completely clear. So you don't hear a thing. You really don't see a thing. I listened to a podcast for like half of it, but not even with headphones. Like I literally just have it in one of those little running fanny packs, like with the volume up. So I can still like hear the kind of like, you know, surroundings, but podcast. And so I've been doing that and I just, whenever I have even a spare second, I've been doing so much yard work and so many things around the house have gotten done that I've just been putting off. We installed an outdoor shower. I completely like weed whacked the entire backyard that was starting to look like a jungle because we're getting so much rain. And I think that I was talking to Ariel about it the other day. I think that I've figured out like a good, I guess, healthier way to deal with anxiety and stress, which is just like, just do stuff.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting because she is the one that brought it up, that I've just been doing so much more because I do feel that it calms me down during a time where I feel like if I spent any time just watching baseball, for example, which I love doing, I think I would just stress out about, you know, this big life change that's coming. Like I have no idea what it's going to be like to have a toddler and a newborn. And I'm, to be honest, like super stressed about, you know, what that's going to do to the things that I enjoy doing, to working out, to being able to work stress-free. You know, like I work from home, which is great, but you know, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword in that, like, if I feel like Ariel's really struggling with the two, like, what's that going to look like? Like, is that going to put some stress on stuff? So we had a really good conversation about it, but I think that I just realized that my response to being what I think is as stressed as I've ever been has been to just like do a lot more stuff. And it's made me feel better. Like I feel great now, but it's been interesting because literally the closer we get to this baby coming, I'm just like, I'm running, I'm working out, I'm doing more at work. Like I'm working on the house. I've gotten all these things done. So it's been super productive. And I guess it's better than any other way to deal with stress. But I think it's just been healthy for me to identify the fact that I am very stressed.
Well, that's not bad. Preoccupying yourself with like constructive things. You know, I think a lot of people in your situation, right, they could gravitate towards non-healthy alternatives. So I think recognizing, dude, there's gonna be seasons, man. Like you're gonna go through higher stress seasons, lower stress seasons. But I think where it becomes an issue, and I don't know if when we had Ryan Mickler on the show, if he would, you know, have perspective on this, but maybe he was feeling anxious, stress, whatever, and then he gravitated towards something that he's already said was a non-healthy solution to that, right? So if you could find things in your life, and the reason why I brought him up is just because he was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you could find things in your life when you are stressed, like for example, you know, it's no secret if you listen to this podcast that, you know, my family and I, we're going through some stressful stuff with our daughter now. She's been gone almost 2 months in a residency program. And so, you know, in the beginning of that, it was very, 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 very high stress. And I think that I gravitated towards in the mornings, hitting the sauna and the cold plunge, and that seemed to work really well for me. It still does. So that's something that I gravitated towards just to kind of level set the day. And it sounds like you're using running, but I think the reality is, I think what you're bringing light to, which I really appreciate, I think it's really, really great that you brought this up, is that everybody listen to this show, everybody, I don't care, male, woman, it doesn't matter. Stress, anxiety, difficulty, adversity, it doesn't matter. All of those things will present themselves at some point in your life. They will. And they might come in different levels, but those levels are all relative to the individual going through it. So if this is the most anxious and anxiety and stress you've ever been, who am I to judge this because you have a second baby on the way? The reality is that's the reason why you're having that. Whereas other people listening might be stressed, anxious because they just lost their job or they just whatever. And there's no better or worse here. Everybody's just trying to get through it. And I think if you can get through it with healthy alternatives, long-term, long-term, it'll be better for everybody. But if you start gravitating towards the drugs, the alcohol, the other ways to kind of, you know, numb what's occurring, that's where I think it goes down a slippery slope. So no, I appreciate you sharing that, man. It makes total sense.
And it's interesting because the biggest difference that I've noticed is like falling asleep at night. Cause there was a little while there where I think like the stress was really building, the anxiety was really building, and I wasn't doing the things and changes to cope with it. And I just like couldn't fall asleep at night, like mind racing. And I was telling you this earlier today, like I really enjoy reading at night. But these past couple of weeks, these last few weeks, since I like started really ramping up just my activity in general, like I can't get through more than like 2 pages a night. Cause I'm just like, I'm at the end of the day, like my head hits the pillow and it's like toast, done. And it's nice. It's been nice to like become self-aware of this need to like self-regulate the like anxiety to like movement and stuff to do. And I don't know what this is going to look like once the baby's actually here. I don't know if it's going to be like big weight off my shoulders and like, it's not as bad as I thought. And like, you know, we find a good groove pretty soon. That'd be great. Or I don't know if it's going to be like even more, because I guess what I worry about is there's got to be a point where like, can't do more. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to go David Goggins and
yeah,
run a marathon every morning to like get some of it out. So Yeah, man, it's going to be an interesting time.
Ebb and flow, man. You know who's a good example of that is Andy Stump. So when Andy Stump was, he was shot in his hip, and he had a lot of pain. And then he found CrossFit. And he was having a very difficult time sleeping. And this is maybe not the exact same thing that you're talking about, but it's a good example where he had a lot of pain in his joints and his body. And he found CrossFit where he would just exhaust himself in these workouts, and it helped him sleep. And by having more sleep, by exhausting himself, it just kind of like helped his recovery. That was one of the things that he said, one of the benefits that CrossFit gave him at the time, and one of the reasons why he got so into it.
And, you know, not to just plug Flex and the Train Hard app here, but...
Oh, dude, plug it, because the 16 Bulgarian split squats, if you're listening to this and you follow our Flex program, dude, Gabe programmed...
It's so good.
Right leg, left leg, split Bulgarian... Or excuse me, I'm sorry, not Bulgarian split...
Bulgarian split squats. Yeah.
Oh, but not with a heel elevated. Just split squats, right? A barbell, no, back rack, split squats.
No, they were Bulgarian split squats, back rack. They were supposed to be. That's how it was written.
So did I not elevate my foot on the
apparently not. Okay. But either way, all good.
Bro, I did 135 on the squat rack, and I was doing splits. Yeah, now that you mention it. Yeah, I did those wrong. Okay.
Either way, what you were going to say still applies. So keep going.
16 and 16 was stupid. I'm sitting there and I'm doing 16 right leg, switch leg, 16 left leg, 135 split squats. And bro, I am telling you, man, I was seeing stars the last like five on each leg. I mean, and it got me sore, which is one of the reasons why I like incorporating Flex lately, is because a lot of the movements are not as like quote unquote traditional. I don't do them as much. And so they pack a quick punch on me. More than I would expect.
Yeah, dude, it's all the movements that I really enjoy doing. And the reason I said, you know, not to plug Flex and the Train Hard app, but thinking about how important movement is for me to deal with the times in my life where I am a little more high stress, high anxiety, the worst thing that could happen to me would be to be injured and be limited to being able to like pull that lever when I need it. And it's why I train the way I train, man. Now, like, it feels so good to not be beat up. It feels so good to wake up in the morning and not be like, my back, my ankles, whatever. And training in this way, at least for me, this doesn't have to be for everyone else, but training with more bodybuilding type movements at a tempo, you know, using stuff that isn't like, you know, 30 clean and jerks for time, that isn't, you know, a lot of Olympic lifts. And I'm not saying that those movements aren't powerful. I think they actually really are. It's just, at least the way I approach training and the way that I approach like, oh, there's a time to beat, there's a leaderboard, I get super irresponsible with picking the right loading and volume for that type of training. But this way, like, because things are at a tempo, because I'm more focused on like, is my lat engaging versus just like, how many of these reps can I get done in a minute? It's allowed me to like train really hard. Like I still train super hard, but not potentially get into the position where I'm more prone to injury. Because going back to this whole thing I've been talking about, dude, if I couldn't work out and I was dealing with the anxiety of anything, you know, having another kid, I think I would go crazy. Or have to resort to other things that wouldn't be great. But the fact that I feel good where I can run in the mornings, I can then work out in the gym, I can then do yard work at night and still have a bunch of energy to like be with my kid all day because I take care of my body, like that allows me to deal with this in a healthy way. Being in pain, dude, would be like a non, like it'd be bad news, dude.
Well, yeah. Well, you would have to identify what you can do instead of what you can't do if you were hurt. But yeah, I shared that post on social media, like, spend 20 minutes doing something like this to do something like this. And it's a really good example. I think actually we should create like a challenge in the future that's like 20 minutes a day. And it's like, do something like this for 20 minutes to be able to do this for 20 minutes or for people to do this. And the analogy I used was like, I was doing like dumbbell thrusters or whatever. And by doing those type of things for 20 minutes, it allows me to go do these other things I like to do, mountain biking, skiing, whatever it might be, was the analogy we used, on the social post. But yeah, man, it's good. I'm glad you're finding outlets and it'll continue to evolve. You know, like, dude, people who listen to this podcast, a lot of you guys, husbands, moms, like everybody's got a lot of different hats that they're wearing and things that they're doing. And I think just recognizing what you need at that time to make you feel the way you want to feel is important. And that could adjust over time. Your goals might adjust. As your kids get older, it might adjust. Like talking to Pete, dude, he had kids really young. You know, like Ash and I, like our kids are 13 and 10. That's different than you guys right now. And when our kids are older, it'll give us more time to go do other things. And so maybe my training goals might change. Maybe they'll even get more intense. I mean, dude, maybe I'll want to go do like a Ironman when I'm 50. I don't know, because I'll have more time because the kids are going to be older, as an example. I think just being aware of those things, I think, is important. Maybe not an Ironman at 50. Maybe a half Ironman.
Maybe start with a half. Dude, you could do an Ironman. You could do an Ironman tomorrow if you absolutely need to.
Sal Frizzell was talking about doing a half marathon, wasn't he? What was he talking about doing? No, half Ironman.
Yeah, yeah. So that's 1.2 mile swim. 56 mile bike and then a half marathon. So 13.1 mile run.
Dude, I don't know, man. I did just the half marathon here in San Francisco. I'm gonna blame it on the hills and that one wrecked me. So but I gotta hit up Sal. If you guys also, shameless plug for that one. If you haven't listened to that episode has been doing super well on the podcast. People love it. It was a couple of weeks ago. So make sure you go check out Sal Frizzella, president of First Form and husband father.
Yeah, dude. I know we're coming up on 50, but one thing that I had to share, and this will be a little bit, you know, past, it'll be like 2 weeks since this happened, but when we recorded this, so the eclipse just happened. And
yeah,
two things fascinating about the solar eclipse. Thing number one is how, like, I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but how, like, so we were in one of the best places to see it in its totality, like 100% coverage.
Oh, and again?
In just Central Texas, like, you know, Austin, Dallas, I think had like, honestly, the best, but Texas had, you know, one of the best areas to view 100%. And apparently like a bunch of people flew in, like, yeah. like a huge bump to the economy. And I thought that it was super interesting because there were still, like, if you live in other places, you can still see it. It just doesn't cover it like 100%. So I just thought it was interesting that people would, like, you know, travel to see what was like a circle over a circle versus like at half covered. And I'm not trying to diminish the fact that it was really cool. I am a little sour that it was super cloudy by me when it happened, so I couldn't even see it, even though I live here. But I thought it was interesting that how many people apparently traveled to the state of Texas.
You're a little sour, dude. I mean, Texas is supposed to offer you more and it was cloudy. That's
no, dude, I was upset that it was cloudy, but,
people finding things that make them happy. Right. And then identifying those and go out there. Like, dude, the older I get, the more I realize, man, like, hey, if you could find moments in time where you can go out there and just have a hell of a time as a family, as an individual and over whatever the thing might be, dude, go for it. But yeah, I saw Tim Kennedy put up some stuff like how the airport was like super packed and like he was having a hard time.
Oh my God. He's so classic. But he was, he said he's glad they're leaving Texas.
Dude,
did you watch the video?
I didn't watch the video yet. I just saw that he had all that.
These people glad they're leaving Texas. Anyway, and then the last note I had is, dude, Texans love Texas. And I am 100%.
You're converted now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to keep you posted. I had a Montana knife company reach out to me and say they wanted to send me something. Dude, I'll have to keep posted what it is. I have no idea what it is.
I was just listening to Andy Stumpf the other day and they sponsor his podcast and I was checking them out.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned them.
Dude, I don't know. They asked for my shirt size. So hopefully it's not just the shirt. Hopefully, I mean, if it's just a shirt, I'll still be super stoked. Like, I'm very grateful. But dude, hopefully it's one of those sick knives. But hey, if you made it all the way through this episode, we appreciate you. You know, go back, check out the other guests. A lot of really cool conversations. We're going to have a lot more to come. If you have not checked out the Train Hard app, you know, we talked about it earlier in the episode, talking about Flex. We also had, you know, Gabe does his sweet ads in the middle of the podcast. Always sounds very professional and legit. But the Train Hard app is what we use every single day to train with. And that's all I got, man. Any closing remarks here, Gabe?
No, man, that's it. I think we'll dive into it a little bit more detail in a future podcast, but when this comes out, we'll be a few weeks from the next cycle of Flex. So Flex is the program in the app that does go from like one cycle straight into the other. We alternate between biasing volume and hypertrophy, and then a little bit more of a strength bias. So we're going to have a strength bias in the next cycle. And I'm super excited for the rep scheme that I came up for those 6 weeks to kind of try and build to some 3 rep maxes on the bench press, the back squat, and I believe the weighted pull up. But yeah, that's going to be a really fun one. So we got really big in this last cycle. Now we're going to get really strong, alternate between the two, and man.
Dude, for the first time ever, Train Hard Men's Club this Sunday is going to be a flex inspired.
Love to hear.
Men's Club. We've never done it before. So I'm really interested to see how many people we have come out. Cause like last week we did hill sprints. This week I'm like, look, straight bodybuilding, heart rate won't get past, you know, 150 or whatever we're going to say. Cause the hill sprints was like, you know, straight gas. Right? Yeah, you're just out. But I'll have to let you know. But this week, bodybuilding here for Train Hard Men's Club.
Awesome. I love it.